Neuromancer by William Gibson, continued. Cassette 4, Side 2. Michelle was the kink, Case decided. Her eyes never left him. "Can I put some clothes on?" he asked. Pierre had insisted on stripping him, searching the seams of his jeans. Now he sat naked on a wicker footstool, with one foot obscenely white. Roland asked Pierre something in French. Pierre, at the window again, was peering through a flat little pair of binoculars.
"Non,"
he said absently, and Roland shrugged, raising his eyebrows at Case. Case decided it was a good time to smile. Roland returned the smile. Oldest cop bullshit in the book, Case thought. "Look," he said, "I'm sick. Had this god-awful drug in a bar, you know. I want to lie down. You got me already. You say you got Armitage. You got him. Go ask him. I'm just hired help." Roland nodded.
"And Kolodny?"
"She was with Armitage when he hired me. Just muscle, a razor girl, far as I know, which isn't too far."
"You know that Armitage's real name is Corto," Pierre said, his eyes still hidden by the soft plastic flanges of the binoculars. "How do you know that, my friend?"
"I guess he mentioned it sometime," Case said, regretting the slip. "Everybody's got a couple names. Your name, Pierre?"
"We know how you were repaired in Chiba," Michelle said, "and that may have been Wintermute's first mistake."
Case stared at her as blankly as he could. The name hadn't been mentioned before.
"The process employed on you resulted in the clinic's owner applying for 7 basic patents. Do you know what that means?"
"No."
"It means that the operator of a black clinic in Chiba City now owns a controlling interest in 3 major medical research consortiums. This reverses the usual order of things, you see. It attracted attention."
She crossed her brown arms against her small, high breasts and settled back against the print cushion. Case wondered how old she might be. People said that age always showed in the eyes, but he'd never been able to see it. Julie Dean had had the eyes of a disinterested 10-year-old behind the rose quartz of his glasses. Nothing old about Michelle but her knuckles. "Traced you to the sprawl, lost you again, then caught up with you as you were leaving for Istanbul. We backtracked, traced you through the grid, determined that you'd instigated a riot at SenseNet. SenseNet was eager to cooperate. They ran an inventory for us. They discovered that McCoy Polly's ROM personality construct was missing."
"In Istanbul," Roland said, almost apologetically, "it was very easy. The woman had alienated Armitage's contact with the secret police."
"And then you came here," Pierre said, slipping the binoculars into his shorts pocket. "We were delighted." "Chance to work on your tan?"
"You know what we mean," Michelle said. "If you wish to pretend that you do not, you only make things more difficult for yourself. There is still the matter of extradition. You will return with us, Case, as will Armitage. But where exactly will we all be going? To Switzerland, where you will be merely a pawn in the trial of an artificial intelligence? Or to Alabama, where you can be proven to have participated not only in data invasion and larceny, but in an act of public mischief which cost 14 innocent lives. The choice is yours."
Case took a Yeheyuan from his pocket. Pierre lit it for him with the gold Dunhill.
"Would Armitage protect you?"
The question was punctuated by the lighter's bright jaws snapping shut. Case looked up at him through the ache and bitterness of beta-phenethylamine.
"How old are you, boss?"
"Old enough to know that you are fucked, burnt, that this is over and you are in the way."
"One thing," Case said and drew on his cigarette. He blew the smoke up at the touring registry agent. "Do you guys have any real jurisdiction out here? I mean, shouldn't you have the Freeside security team in on this party? It's their turf, isn't it?" He saw the dark eyes harden in the lean boy face and tensed for the blow, but Pierre only shrugged.
"It doesn't matter," Roland said. "You will come with us. We are at home with situations of legal ambiguity. The treaties under which our arm of the registry operates grant us a great deal of flexibility, and we create flexibility in situations where it is required.
The mask of amiability was down suddenly, Roland's eyes as hard as Pierre's. "You are worse than a fool," Michelle said, getting to her feet, the pistol in her hand. "You have no care for your species. For thousands of years, men dreamed of pacts with demons. Only now are such things possible. And what would you be paid with? What would your price be for aiding this thing to free itself and grow?" There was a knowing weariness in her young voice that no 19-year-old could have mustered. "You will dress now. You will come with us. Along with the one you call Armitage, you will return with us to Geneva and give testimony in the trial of this intelligence. Otherwise, we kill you. Now." She raised the pistol, a smooth black Walther, with an integral silencer. "I'm dressing already," he said, stumbling toward the bed. His legs were still numb, clumsy. He fumbled with a clean T-shirt. "We have a ship standing by. We will erase Polly's construct with a pulse weapon." "Sensenet'll be pissed," Case said, thinking. "And all the evidence in the Hosaka. They are in some difficulty already for having owned such a thing." Case pulled the shirt over his head. He saw the shuriken on the bed, lifeless metal, his star. He felt for the anger. It was gone. Time to give in, to roll with it. He thought of the toxin sacks. "Here comes the meat," he muttered. In the elevator to the meadow, he thought of Molly. She might already be in Straylight, hunting Riviera. Hunted, probably, by Hideo, who was almost certainly the ninja clone of the Finn's story, the one who'd come to retrieve the talking head. He rested his forehead against the matte black plastic of a wall panel and closed his eyes. His limbs were wood, old, warped, and heavy with rain. Lunch was being served beneath the trees, under the bright umbrellas. Roland and Michelle fell into character, chattering brightly in French. Pierre came behind. Michelle kept the muzzle of her pistol close to his ribs, concealing the gun with a white duck jacket she draped over her arm. Crossing the meadow, weaving between the tables and the trees, he wondered if she would shoot him if he collapsed now. Black fur boiled at the borders of his vision. He glanced up at the hot white band of the Lotto Atchison armature and saw the giant butterfly banking gracefully against recorded sky. At the edge of the meadow, they came to a railinged cliffside, wildflowers dancing in the updraft from the canyon that was Desiderata. Michelle tossed her short dark hair and pointed, saying something in French to Roland. She sounded genuinely happy. Case followed the direction of her gesture and saw the curve of plaining lakes, the white glint of casinos, turquoise rectangles of 1,000 pools, the bodies of bathers, tiny bronze hieroglyphs, all held in serene approximation of gravity against the endless curve of Freeside's hull. They followed the railing to an ornate iron bridge that arched over Desiderata. Michelle prodded him with the muzzle of the Walther. "Take it easy. I can't hardly walk today." They were a little over a quarter of the way across when the microlight struck, its electric engine silent until the carbon fiber prop chopped away the top of Pierre's skull. They were in the thing's shadow for an instant. Case felt the hot blood spray across the back of his neck, and then someone tripped him. He rolled, seeing Michelle on her back, knees up, aiming the Walther with both hands. That's a waste of effort, he thought, with the strange lucidity of shock. She was trying to shoot down the microlight. And then he was running. He looked back as he passed the first of the trees. Roland was running after him. He saw the fragile biplane strike the iron railing of the bridge, crumple, cartwheel, sweeping the girl with it down into Desiderata. Roland hadn't looked back. His face was fixed, white, his teeth bared. He had something in his hand. The gardening robot took Roland as he passed that same tree. It fell straight out of the groomed branches, a thing like a crab, diagonally striped with black and yellow. "You killed him," Case panted, running. "Crazy motherfucker, you killed them all." Chapter 14. The little train shot through its tunnel at 80 kilometers per hour. Case kept his eyes closed. The shower had helped, but he'd lost his breakfast when he'd looked down and seen Pierre's blood washing pink across the white tiles. Gravity fell away as the spindle narrowed. Case's stomach churned. Errol was waiting with his scooter beside the dock.
Case, man, big problem.
The soft voice faint in his phones. He chinned the volume control and peered into the Lexan faceplate of Errol's helmet.
Gotta get to Garvey, Errol. Yo, strap in, man. But Garvey captive. Yacht came before she came back. Now she lockin' steady on Marcus Garvey.
Touring? Came before? Case climbed into the scooter's frame and began to fasten the straps.
Japan yacht. Brought you package.
Armitage. Confused images of wasps and spiders rose in Case's mind as they came in sight of Marcus Garvey. The little tug was snug against the gray thorax of a sleek, insectile ship 5 times her length. The arms of grapples stood out against Garvey's patched hull with the strange clarity of vacuum and raw sunlight. A pale, corrugated gangway curved out of the yacht, snaked sideways to avoid the tug's engines, and covered the aft hatch. There was something obscene about the arrangement, but it had more to do with ideas of feeding than of sex.
What's happening with Malcolm?
Malcolm fine. Nobody come down the tube. Yacht pilot talk to him, say relax.
As they swung past the gray ship, Case saw the name Haniwa in crisp white capitals beneath an oblong cluster of Japanese.
I don't like this, man. I was thinking maybe it's time we got our ass out of here anyway.
Malcolm thinking that precise thing, man, but Garvey not be going far like that.
Malcolm was purring a speeded-up patois to his radio when Case came through the forward lock and removed his helmet.
Errol's gone back to the rocker, Case said.
Malcolm nodded, still whispering to the microphone. Case pulled himself over the pilot's drifting tangle of dreadlocks and began to remove his suit. Malcolm's eyes were closed now. He nodded as he listened to some reply over a pair of phones with bright orange pads, his brow creased with concentration. He wore ragged jeans and an old green nylon jacket with the sleeves ripped out. Case snapped the red Sanyo suit to a storage hammock and pulled himself down to the G-web.
See what the ghost say, man, Malcolm said. Computer keeps asking for you.
So who's up there in that thing?
Some Japan boy came before, and now he joined by you Mr. Armitage, come out freeside.
Case put the trodes on and jacked in.
Dixie?
The Matrix showed him the pink spheres of the steel combine in Sikkim.
What you getting up to, boy? I've been hearing lurid stories. Hosaka's patched into a twin bank on your boss's boat now. Really hopping. You pull some touring heat?
Yeah, but Wintermute killed him.
Well, that won't hold him long. Plenty more where those came from. Be up here in force. Bet their decks are all over this grid sector like flies on shit. And your boss, Case, he says go. He says run it and run it now.
Case punched for the freeside coordinates.
Let me take that a sec, Case.
The Matrix blurred and phased as the flatline executed an intricate series of jumps with a speed and accuracy that made Case wince with envy.
Shit, Dixie. Hey, boy, I was that good when I was alive. You ain't seen nothing. No hands.
That's it, huh? Big green rectangle off left.
You got it. Corporate core data for Tessia Ashpool S.A., and that ice is generated by their 2 friendly AIs. On par with anything in the military sector, looks to me. That's King Hell Ice, Case. Black as the grave and slick as glass. Fry your brain soon as look at you.
We get any closer now, it'll have traces up our ass and out both ears. Be telling the boys in the TA boardroom the size of your shoes and how long your dick is.
This isn't looking so hot, is it? I mean, the Tourings are on it. I was thinking maybe we should try to bail out. I can take you.
Yeah? No shit? You don't want to see what that Chinese program can do?
Well, I...
Case stared at the green walls of the TA ice.
Well... Screw it. Yeah. We run.
Slot it.
Hey, Malcolm, Case said, jacking out. I'm probably going to be under the trodes for maybe 8 hours straight.
Malcolm was smoking again. The cabin was swimming in smoke.
So I can't get to the head.
No problem, man.
The Zionite executed a high forward somersault and rummaged through the contents of a zippered mesh bag, coming up with a coil of transparent tubing and something else, something sealed in a sterile bubble pack. He called it a Texas catheter, and Case didn't like it at all. He slotted the Chinese virus, paused, then drove it home. "Okay," he said, "we're on. Listen, Malcolm, if it gets really funny, you can grab my left wrist. I'll feel it. Otherwise, I guess you do what the Hosaka tells you, okay?"
"Sure, man." Malcolm lit a fresh joint.
"And turn the scrubber up. I don't want that shit tangling with my neurotransmitters. I got a bad hangover as it is." Malcolm grinned. Case jacked back in.
"Christ on a crutch," the flatline said. "Take a look at this."
The Chinese virus was unfolding around them. Polychrome shadow, countless translucent layers, shifting and recombining. Protean, enormous, it towered above them, blotting out the void.
"Big mother," the flatline said.
"I'm gonna check Molly," Case said, tapping the SimStim switch. Free fall. The sensation was like diving through perfectly clear water. She was falling, rising through a wide tube of fluted lunar concrete, lit at 2-meter intervals by rings of white neon. The link was one way. He couldn't talk to her. He flipped.
"Boy, that is one mean piece of software. Hottest thing since sliced bread. That goddamn thing's invisible. I just now rented 20 seconds on that little pink box, 4 jumps left of the TA ice. Had a look at what we look like. We don't. We're not there."
Case searched the matrix around the Tessier Ashpool ice until he found the pink structure, a standard commercial unit, and punched in closer to it.
"Maybe it's defective."
"Maybe, but I doubt it.
Our baby's military, though, and new. It just doesn't register. If it did, we'd read as some kind of Chinese sneak attack, but nobody's twigged to us at all. Maybe not even the folks in Straylight."
Case watched the blank wall that screened Straylight. "Well," he said, "that's an advantage, right?"
"Maybe."
The construct approximated laughter. Case winced at the sensation.
"I checked old Quang 11 out again for you, boy. It's real friendly, long as you're on the trigger end. Just polite and helpful as can be. Speaks good English, too. You ever hear of a slow virus before?"
"No."
"I did, once. Just an idea back then. But that's what old Quang's all about. This ain't bore and inject. It's more like we interface with the ice so slow the ice doesn't feel it. The face of the Quang logics kind of sleazes up to the target and mutates, so it gets to be exactly like the ice fabric. Then we lock on, and the main programs cut in, start talking circles round the logics in the ice. We go Siamese twin on 'em before they even get restless."
The flatline laughed.
"Wish you weren't so damn jolly today, man. That laugh of yours sort of gets me in the spine."
"Too bad," the flatline said. "Old dead man needs his laughs."
Case slapped the SimStim switch. And crashed through tangled metal and the smell of dust, the heels of his hands skidding as they struck slick paper. Something behind him collapsed noisily.
"Come on," said the Finn. "Ease up a little."
Case lay sprawled across a pile of yellowing magazines, the girls shining up at him in the dimness of Metro holographics, a wistful galaxy of sweet white teeth. He lay there until his heart had slowed, breathing the smell of old magazines.
"Wintermute," he said.
"Yeah," said the Finn, somewhere behind him.
"You got it."
"Fuck off."
Case sat up, rubbing his wrists.
"Come on," said the Finn, stepping out of a sort of alcove in the wall of junk. "This way's better for you, man."
He took his partagas from a coat pocket and lit one. The smell of Cuban tobacco filled the shop.
"You want I should come to you in the Matrix like a burning bush? You aren't missing anything back there. An hour here'll only take you a couple of seconds."
"You ever think maybe it gets on my nerves, you coming on like people I know?"
He stood, swatting pale dust from the front of his black jeans. He turned, glaring back at the dusty shop windows, the closed door to the street.
"What's out there, New York? Or does it just stop?"
"Well," said the Finn, "it's like that tree, you know. falls in the woods, but maybe there's nobody to hear it. He showed Case his huge front teeth and puffed his cigarette. You can go for a walk, Juana. It's all there. Or anyway, all the parts of it you ever saw. This is memory, right? I tap you, sort it out, and feed it back in.
I don't have this good a memory, Case said, looking around. He looked down at his hands, turning them over. He tried to remember what the lines on his palms were like, but couldn't.
Everybody does, the Finn said, dropping his cigarette and grinding it out under his heel. But not many of you can access it. Artists can, mostly, if they're any good. If you could lay this construct over the reality, the Finn's place in Lower Manhattan, you'd see a difference, but maybe not as much as you'd think. Memory's holographic for you.
The Finn tugged at one of his small ears.
I'm different.
How do you mean holographic? The word made him think of Riviera.
The holographic paradigm is the closest thing you've worked out to a representation of human memory, is all. But you've never done anything about it. People, I mean.
The Finn stepped forward and canted his streamlined skull to peer up at Case.
Maybe if you had, I wouldn't be happening.
What's that supposed to mean? The Finn shrugged. His tattered tweed was too wide across the shoulders and didn't quite settle back into position.
I'm trying to help you, Case.
Why?
Because I need you.
The large yellow teeth appeared again.
And because you need me.
Bullshit. Can you read my mind, Finn? He grimaced. Wintermute, I mean.
Minds aren't red. See, you've still got the paradigms Print gave you, and you're barely print literate. I can access your memory, but that's not the same as your mind.
He reached into the exposed chassis of an ancient television and withdrew a silver-black vacuum tube.
See this? Part of my DNA, sort of.
He tossed the thing into the shadows, and Case heard it pop and tinkle.
You're always building models, stone circles, cathedrals, pipe organs, adding machines. I got no idea why I'm here now, you know that? But if the real run goes off tonight, you'll have finally managed the real thing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's you in the collective, your species.
You killed those Turings.
The Finn shrugged. Hada hada, you should give a shit. They would have offed you and never thought twice. Anyway, why I got you here? We gotta talk more. Remember this?
And his right hand held the charred wasp's nest from Case's dream. Reek of fuel in the closeness of the dark shop. Case stumbled back against a wall of junk.
Yeah, that was me. Did it with the hollow rig in the window. Another memory I tapped out of you when I flatlined you that first time. Know why it's important?
Case shook his head.
Because.
And the nest somehow was gone.
It's the closest thing you got to what Tessier Ashpool would like to be. The human equivalent. Straylights like that nest, or anyway, it was supposed to work out that way. I figure it'll make you feel better.
Feel better?
To know what they're like. You were starting to hate my guts for a while there. That's good. But hate them instead. Same difference.
Listen, Case said, stepping forward. They never did shit to me. You, it's different. But he couldn't feel the anger.
So, T.A., they made me. The French girl, she said you were selling out the species. Demon, she said I was.
The Finn grinned.
It doesn't much matter. You gotta hate somebody before this is over.
He turned and headed for the back of the shop.
Well, come on. I'll show you a little bit of stray light while I got you here.
He lifted the corner of the blanket. White light poured out.
Shit, man, don't just stand there.
Case followed, rubbing his face.
Okay, said the Finn, and grabbed his elbow.
They were drawn past the stale wool in a puff of dust, into free fall, and a cylindrical corridor of fluted lunar concrete, ringed with white neon at 2-meter intervals.
Jesus, Case said, tumbling. This is the front entrance, the Finn said, his tweed flapping. If this weren't a construct of mine, where the shop is would be the main gate, up by the freeside axis. This'll all be a little low on detail, though, because you don't have the memories. Except for this bit here you got off Molly. Case managed to straighten out, but began to corkscrew in a long spiral.
Hold on, the Finn said. I'll fast forward us.
The walls blurred. Dizzying sensation of headlong movement, colors whipping around corners and through narrow corridors. They seemed at one point to pass through several meters of solid wall, a flash of pitch darkness.
Here, the Finn said. This is it.
They floated in the center of a perfectly square room, walls and ceiling paneled in rectangular sections of dark wood. The floor was covered by a single square of brilliant carpet patterned after a microchip, circuits traced in blue and scarlet wool. In the exact center of the room, aligned precisely with the carpet pattern, stood a square pedestal of frosted white glass.
The Villa Straylight, said a jeweled thing on the pedestal in a voice like music, is a body grown in upon itself, a gothic folly. Each space in Straylight is in some way secret, this endless series of chambers linked by passages, by stairwells vaulted like intestines, where the eye is trapped in narrow curves, carried past ornate screens, empty alcoves.
Essay of Three Janes, the Finn said, producing his Partagas. Wrote that when she was 12. Semiotics course.
The architects of Freeside went to great pains to conceal the fact that the interior of the spindle is arranged with the banal precision of furniture in a hotel room. In Straylight, the hull's inner surface is overgrown with a desperate proliferation of structures, forms flowing, interlocking, rising toward a solid core of microcircuitry, our clan's corporate heart, a cylinder of silicon wormholed with narrow maintenance tunnels, some no wider than a man's hand. The bright crabs burrow there, the drones, alert for micromechanical decay or sabotage.
That was her you saw in the restaurant, the Finn said.
By the standards of the archipelago, the head continued, ours is an old family, the convolutions of our home reflecting that age, but reflecting something else as well. The semiotics of the villa bespeak a turning in, a denial of the bright void beyond the hull. Tessier and Ashpool climbed the well of gravity to discover that they loathed space. They built Freeside to tap the wealth of the new islands, grew rich and eccentric, and began the construction of an extended body in Straylight. We have sealed ourselves away behind our money, growing inward, generating a seamless universe of self. The Villa Straylight knows no sky, recorded or otherwise. At the villa's silicon core is a small room, the only rectilinear chamber in the complex. Here, on a plain pedestal of glass, rests an ornate bust, platinum and cloisonné, studded with lapis and pearl. The bright marbles of its eyes were cut from the synthetic ruby viewport of the ship that brought the first Tessier up the well and returned for the first Ashpool. The head fell silent.
Well, Case asked, finally, almost expecting the thing to answer him.
That's all she wrote, the Finn said. Didn't finish it. Just a kid then. This thing's a ceremonial terminal, sort of. I need Molly in here with the right word at the right time. That's the catch. Doesn't mean shit how deep you and the Flatline ride that Chinese virus if this thing doesn't hear the magic word.
So, what's the word?
I don't know. You might say what I am is basically defined by the fact that I don't know, because I can't know. I am that which knoweth not the word. If you knew, man, and told me, I couldn't know. It's hardwired in. Someone else has to learn it and bring it here, just when you and the Flatline punch through that ice and scramble the cores.
What happens then?
I don't exist after that. I cease.
Okay by me, Case said.
Sure, but you watch your ass, Case. My, other lobe is on to us, it looks like. One burning bush looks pretty much like another, and Armitage is starting to go.
What's that mean? But the paneled room folded itself through a dozen impossible angles, tumbling away into cyberspace like an origami crane. Chapter 15.
You trying to break my record, son? The Flatline asked. You were brain dead again. 5 seconds.
"Sit tight," Case said, and hit the SimStim switch. She crouched in darkness, her palms against rough concrete. Case, 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 Case. The digital display pulsed his name in alphanumerics, Wintermute informing her of the link. "Cute," she said. She rocked back on her heels and rubbed her palms together, cracked her knuckles. "What kept you?" "Time, Molly. Time, now." She pressed her tongue hard against her lower front teeth. One moved slightly, activating her microchannel amps. The random bounce of photons through the darkness was converted to a pulse of electrons, the concrete around her coming up ghost pale and grainy. "Okay, honey, now we go out to play." Her hiding place proved to be a service tunnel of some kind. She crawled out through a hinged, ornate grill of tarnished brass. He saw enough of her arms and hands to know that she wore the polycarbon suit again. Under the plastic, he felt the familiar tension of thin, tight leather. There was something slung under her arm in a harness or holster. She stood up, unzipped the suit, and touched the checkered plastic of a pistol grip. "Hey, Case," she said, barely voicing the words. "You listening? Tell you a story. Had me this boy once. You kind of remind me." She turned and surveyed the corridor. "Johnny, his name was." The low, vaulted hallway was lined with dozens of museum cases, archaic-looking glass-fronted boxes made of brown wood. They looked awkward there, against the organic curves of the hallway's walls, as though they'd been brought in and set up in a line for some forgotten purpose. Dull brass fixtures held globes of white light at 10-meter intervals. The floor was uneven, and as she set off along the corridor, Case realized that hundreds of small rugs and carpets had been put down at random. In some places, they were six deep, the floor a soft patchwork of hand-woven wool. Molly paid little attention to the cabinets and their contents, which irritated him. He had to satisfy himself with her disinterested glances, which gave him fragments of pottery, antique weapons, a thing so densely studded with rusted nails that it was unrecognizable, frayed sections of tapestry. "My Johnny, see? He was smart, real flash boy. Started out as a stash on Memory Lane. Chips in his head, and people paid to hide data there. Had the yak after him night I met him, and I did for their assassin. More luck than anything else, but I did for him. And after that, it was tight and sweet, Case." Her lips barely moved. He felt her form the words. He didn't need to hear them spoken aloud. "We had a setup with a squid, so we could read the traces of everything he'd ever stored. Ran it all out on tape and started twisting selected clients. Ex-clients. I was bagman, muscle, watchdog. I was real happy. You ever been happy, Case? He was my boy. We worked together, partners. I was maybe 8 weeks out of the puppet house when I met him." She paused, edged around a sharp turn, and continued. More of the glossy wooden cases, their sides a color that reminded him of cockroach wings. "Tight, sweet, just ticking along we were. Like nobody could ever touch us. I wasn't going to let them. Yakuza, I guess, they still wanted Johnny's ass. 'Cause I'd killed their man. 'Cause Johnny'd burned them. And the yak, they can afford to move so fucking slow, man. They'll wait years and years. Give you a whole life, just so you'll have more to lose when they come out and take it away. Patient like a spider. Zen spiders. I didn't know that then. Or if I did, I figured it didn't apply to us. Like when you're young, you figure you're unique. I was young. Then they came, when we were thinking we maybe had enough to be able to quit, pack it in, go to Europe maybe. Not that either of us knew what we'd do there, with nothing to do. But we were living fat. Swiss orbital accounts and a crib full of toys and furniture. Takes the edge off your game. So that first one they'd sent, he'd been hot. Reflexes like you never saw. Implants. Enough style for 10 ordinary hoods. But the second one, he was, I don't know, like a monk. Cloned. Stone killer from the cells on up. Had it in him. Death. This silence. He gave it off in a cloud. Her voice trailed off as the corridor split, identical stairwells descending. She took the left.
One time, I was a little kid. We were squatting. It was down by the Hudson. And those rats, man, they were big. It's the chemicals get into them. Big as I was. And all night, one had been scrambling under the floor of the squat. Round dawn, somebody brought this old man in. Seams down his cheeks and his eyes, all red. Had a roll of greasy leather like you'd keep steel tools in to keep the rust off. Spread it out. Had this old revolver and 3 shells. Old man, he puts 1 bullet in there. Then he starts walking up and down the squat. We're hanging back by the walls. Back and forth. Got his arms crossed, head down, like he's forgotten the gun. Listening for the rat. We got real quiet. Old man takes a step. Rat moves. Rat moves, he takes another step. An hour of that. Then he seems to remember his gun. Points it at the floor, grins, and pulls the trigger. Rolled it back, up and left. I crawled under there later. Rat had a hole between its eyes. She was watching the sealed doorways that opened at intervals along the corridor. The second one, the one who came for Johnny, he was like that old man. Not old, but he was like that. He killed that way. The corridor widened. The sea of rich carpets undulated gently beneath an enormous candelabrum whose lowest crystal pendant reached nearly to the floor. Crystal tinkled as Molly entered the hall. 3rd door left, blinked the readout. She turned left, avoiding the inverted tree of crystal. I just saw him once, on my way into our place. He was coming out. We lived in a converted factory space, lots of young comers from SenseNet, like that. Pretty good security to start with, and I'd put in some real heavy stuff to make it really tight. I knew Johnny was up there, but this little guy, he caught my eye as he was coming out. Didn't say a word. We just looked at each other, and I knew. Plain little guy, plain clothes, no pride in him, humble. He looked at me and got into a pedicab. I knew. Went upstairs, and Johnny was sitting in a chair by the window with his mouth a little open, like he'd just thought of something to say. The door in front of her was old, a carved slab of Thai teak that seemed to have been sawn in half to fit the low doorway. A primitive mechanical lock with a stainless face had been inset beneath a swirling dragon. She knelt, drew a tight little roll of black chamois from an inside pocket, and selected a needle-thin pick. Never much found anybody I gave a damn about after that. She inserted the pick and worked in silence, nibbling at her lower lip. She seemed to rely on touch alone. Her eyes unfocused, and the door was a blur of blonde wood. Case listened to the silence of the hall, punctuated by the soft clink of the candelabrum. Candles? Straylight was all wrong. He remembered Kath's story of a castle with pools and lilies, and 3 Jane's mannered words recited musically by the head. A place grown in upon itself. Straylight smelled faintly musty, faintly perfumed, like a church. Where were the Tessier ash pools? He'd expected some clean hive of disciplined activity, but Molly had seen no one. Her monologue made him uneasy. She'd never told him that much about herself before. Aside from her story in the cubicle, she'd seldom said anything that had even indicated that she had a past. She closed her eyes, and there was a click that Case felt rather than heard. It made him remember the magnetic locks on the door of her cubicle in the puppet place. The door had opened for him, even though he'd had the wrong chip. That was Wintermute, manipulating the lock the way it had manipulated the drone micro and the robot gardener. The lock system in the puppet place had been a subunit of Freeside's security system. The simple mechanical lock here would pose a real problem for the AI, requiring either a drone of some kind or a human agent. She opened her eyes, put the pick into the chamois, carefully re-rolled it, and tucked it back into its pocket. "Guess you're kind of like he was," she said. "Think you're born to run. Figure what you were back in Chiba. That was a stripped-down version of what you'd be doing anywhere. Bad luck. It'll do that sometimes. Get you down to basics." She stood, stretched, shook herself. "You know, I figure the one Tessier Ashpool sent after that Jimmy, the boy who stole the head, he must be pretty much the same as the one the Yak sent to kill Johnny."
She drew the Fletcher from its holster and dialed the barrel to full auto. The ugliness of the door struck Case as she reached for it. Not the door itself, which was beautiful, or had once been part of some more beautiful whole, but the way it had been sawn down to fit a particular entrance. Even the shape was wrong, a rectangle amid smooth curves of polished concrete. They'd imported these things, he thought, and then forced it all to fit, but none of it fit. The door was like the awkward cabinets, the huge crystal tree. Then he remembered Three Jane's essay and imagined that the fittings had been hauled up the well to flesh out some master plan, a dream long lost in the compulsive effort to fill space, to replicate some family image of self. He remembered the shattered nest, the eyeless things writhing. Molly grasped one of the carved dragon's forelegs, and the door swung open easily. The room behind was small, cramped, little more than a closet. Gray steel tool cabinets were backed against a curving wall. A light fixture had come on automatically. She closed the door behind her and went to the ranged lockers. Third left, pulsed the optic chip, Wintermute overriding her time display. Five down. But she opened the top drawer first. It was no more than a shallow tray, empty. The second was empty as well. The third, which was deeper, contained dull beads of solder and a small brown thing that looked like a human finger bone. The fourth drawer held a damp, swollen copy of an obsolete technical manual in French and Japanese. In the fifth, behind the armored gauntlet of a heavy vacuum suit, she found the key. It was like a dull brass coin with a short, hollow tube brazed against one edge. She turned it slowly in her hand, and Case saw that the interior of the tube was lined with studs and flanges. The letters CHUBB were molded across one face of the coin. The other was blank. "He told me," she whispered, "Wintermute, how he played a waiting game for years. Didn't have any real power then, but he could use the villa's security and custodial systems to keep track of where everything was, how things moved, where they went. He saw somebody lose this key 20 years ago, and he managed to get somebody else to leave it here. Then he killed him, the boy who'd brought it here. Kid was 8. She closed her white fingers over the key. So nobody would find it. She took a length of black nylon cord from the suit's kangaroo pocket and threaded it through the round hole above Chub. Knotting it, she hung it around her neck. They were always fucking him over with how old-fashioned they were, he said, all their 19th-century stuff. He looked just like the Finn, on the screen in that meat puppet hole. Almost thought he was the Finn if I wasn't careful. Her readout flared the time, alpha numerics superimposed over the gray steel chests. He said if they'd turned into what they'd wanted to, he could have gotten out a long time ago. But they didn't. Screwed up. Freaks like Three Jane. That's what he called her. But he talked like he liked her. She turned, opened the door, and stepped out, her hand brushing the checkered grip of the holstered Fletcher. Case flipped. Quang grade Mark 11 was growing. "Dixie, you think this thing'll work? Does a bear shit in the woods?" The flatline punched them up through shifting rainbow strata. Something dark was forming at the core of the Chinese program. The density of information overwhelmed the fabric of the matrix, triggering hypnagogic images. Faint kaleidoscopic angles centered into a silver-black focal point. Case watched childhood symbols of evil and bad luck tumble out along translucent planes, swastikas, skulls, and crossbones, dice flashing snake eyes. If he looked directly at that null point, no outline would form. It took a dozen quick peripheral takes before he had it, a shark thing, gleaming like obsidian, the black mirrors of its flanks reflecting faint, distant lights that bore no relationship to the matrix around it. "That's the sting," the construct said. "When Quang's good and belly tight with the Tessia Ashpool core, we're riding that through." "You were right, Dix. There's some kind of manual override on the hard wiring that keeps Wintermute under control." This book is continued on Cassette 5, Side 1.